Greetings. Welcome to the Gundam Explained Show Live. I am Batman. And joining me is Steven of Midnight Hatter. Steven, how are you?
I don't know who this Steven is, but I'm Venom Snake.
Oh, Venom Snake. My notes here say, Steven, is this some sort of trick? Are you the Joker? You are the Joker. You must be. Alfred. Alfred, send in the Batmobile. Okay, enough with that. That was fun. You know what? And the reason I'm saying enough with that, because I need to get this mask off because it is hot. But like I was saying, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show.
And you are I was going to say you're the second Adam with a four-letter last name to don the Batman costume.
Oh, that's right. Adam West.
There you go.
That's right. That is right. And, you know, 20 years ago when I was skinnier and super white as I am, I looked exactly like Edward or that actor. I got to get this off. I'm telling you, it's been fun. This makeup is going to take forever to come off. So for those that aren't.
Oh, yeah.
Or they're just listening. I started the show as Batman.
And now you've got, you know, the Edward Cullen look, or I guess, you know, well, he's Bruce Wayne technically, but from the Batman, Pattinson, Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson, that's his name. Okay, I'm going to try to take this thing off. Oh, I feel better. Now I'm just wearing some black spandex. Okay, well, you know what? We did this because it is Halloween, but I got to say your costume is awesome. I was not expecting that.
Like I said, I didn't put a ton of effort into it, but it serves two purposes, because obviously one of my favorite characters of all time, Punished Snake, but also it's my weekly reminder to Adam to finally freaking play Metal Gear Solid 5. I know.
Dude, it's so funny because I remember the other day I was trying to think of something to play that's a little different. I'm like, man, what should I play? I know there's something I've been meaning to play, and it was that. It was
MGSV.
Let me adjust this just a little bit. But no, guys, everyone, welcome to this. We're going to have a fun show today because it is Halloween. And so we did our Halloween thing. Did you do a Halloween thing?
Yeah, you know, took the kiddo out trick-or-treating. She didn't make it to very many houses because, you know, tiny legs. But
oh, okay. What was she dressed up as?
She was a cat. And actually, I did her face paint. Like, we did our face paint together. She did the scars on my face for Venom Snake. And I did her, like, whiskers and her little cat nose and everything. So that was fun.
Ah, that is fun. Yeah, we went with a neighbor to another neighborhood. This neighborhood doesn't have as many kids. It's older kind of, but I mean, there's a lot of very young kids. So it's like one of those where pretty soon it's going to then have more, you know, they just built the elementary school a few years ago over here. But so we went to another one just down the street, my son, he's 11. He was the only one that's really going, and they were just playing soccer in the backyard. And so now I'm back here. My wife went over there so we can do the Gundam Explained show live. As always, it doesn't matter what's happening.
Rain, sleet, or snow.
But yeah, so you know, I wanted to bring up something that was really awesome, and that was your show yesterday, which that was just fun. Like so fun. And especially because it went on for so long. And to be honest, I'd love that, even though I was like getting tired and trying to hold on. But those, when you can, especially when it's five people and to be able to talk for so long, I think it's awesome.
And I'm glad that we had the opportunity to kind of let it breathe a little bit. But yeah, definitely not what we're used to, being kind of like interviewed on our own show, right?
Well, I love that too, because, you know, we talk about that stuff every once in a while. But then sometimes we go a while not talking about that stuff. And then maybe there's new people that are watching the show.
And that's why I was like, I'm down for this, because you know, one of the things about content creation that I've been kind of learning lately, or I guess relearning technically, is that people need to be reminded more than they need to be told, right? So like, as a content creator, you definitely need to get into the habit of repeating yourself, not because and you're going to start to sound like a broken record, because even the people that regularly watch, it might be three or four times that you say something that then they pick it up and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, so he did say that. And so that's why I don't mind saying, like, hey, you know, I say it 100 times, like, I'm a Zeta guy. Like, that's
yeah. And yeah, you're right, because it's kind of cool to set that context, especially with the conversation with a lot of people, because if then those others know, in the Undergated, I forgot if I said the name, Undergated Podcast, you can check them out.
Undergated Network.
Undergated Network, okay, on YouTube. And they have their Instagram. So your show from yesterday in the description has everyone's Instagram. So that's how I went and followed them. Really cool, diverse group of guys, because they all have their own thing they're into. You know, like Coop was really into robot spirits. I don't normally come across people. They're like,
I know. That, you know, like, yeah, that was like the kindred spirit there. And then, like, yeah, Austin, I mean, just he comes by his sci-fi love naturally, right? Like, you know, his dad kind of like raised him from a young age.
Reminded me of like with my dad, because I remember watching all the Star Treks with my dad too, like that whole time. I remember we would always record Voyager just in case we would miss it and all that. And I like how there's very similar tastes in like some of the UC stuff we really like, especially like he likes AOZ stuff.
And then CD.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked his sort of style because he was one where it's like, you know, everything I paint, it's like,
right,
everything is painted because the colors aren't correct.
Right. You know? And you know, for him, he said as much where it was like, look, for me, it's all about the suits. He's like, you know, the story's great and all, but like, it's all about the suits at the end of the day. And that's why, you know, of everyone, like, he's the least like tied to UC stuff, because even though UC may have the best story, it's like, well, the best mobile suits are from here. And that's what I'm into. So, like you said, you know, it's like everyone kind of gets into Gundam for different reasons. And I think it's great that we are able to find those kind of like threads that we have in common. So,
yeah. Yeah. So fun time, guys. If you haven't, check it out. And also you might hear the dog as trick-or-treaters come by. We don't have any more candy, though, because we put it out. And I guess my wife caught on camera kids dumping the whole thing in there. She went out and talked. My wife's that type. Like, if you try to put one over her, she will let you know. So yeah, I know from
these kids need to know, man. It's disrespectful.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. I mean, she even puts a little note, you know, just, you know, leave for
others. Take two pieces and go.
Yeah. So you might hear the dogs barking, blah, 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 whatever. But anyway, so, you know, I dropped a video earlier this week of, first it was that GM in Gundam EX battle.
Yeah.
You know,
it was the duel between the Gundam pilot.
That there was a situation that occurred where you can see that, you know, starter kind of GM model go up against a technically kind of prototype Gundam. I mean, we don't know too many details yet. I wonder if they will come out with some sort of, I don't know if compendium is the word, but, you know, come out with something that sort of gives more.
Have we seen any, because I don't have the model kits yet, but like, have we seen in the model manual kit books, is there anything in the manual about
that? Is a good point, and I bet that's online. The wikis haven't had anything updated. I mean, not that they're the most reliable, but usually people just throw whatever they find on there. I didn't see anything there, but I, you know, one reason I like to do these battle videos is because a big part of watching Gundam for me is mobile suit battles. So maybe recording myself kind of walking through and, okay, this is interesting. You know, look, it could do that. It kind of sticks with me. So then as I'm watching future stuff, it's like, oh, okay. And then so when I make further videos, I can kind of maybe hold on to that knowledge to kind of really dive into details.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that I'm really glad you went into that kind of like as almost like a fight breakdown, because, you know, I come from enjoying pro wrestling, right? And so one of the things about like a wrestler like Bret Hart is famous for being very methodical in his wrestling style, where it's like he's trying to tell a story in the fight, right? And so, like, you know, his finishing move is a submission hold. He does the sharpshooter. He's got you tied up with your legs, right? So when you see him like hitting someone in the knee over and over, it's like, oh, he's weakening him so that when he puts his finishing move on him, it makes him more susceptible to giving up. And so what people don't, I'm sorry, I can get way into the weeds when it comes to like storytelling tactics, but like it's the same thing that you and I talk about, how there's storytelling in gameplay when you're playing a video game. There is storytelling that happens in a fight that is beyond what the dialogue says, beyond what the stakes are, and you can, you know, break that down based on like the emotion that's on people's faces and like what moves they're trying to do. And like, so I mean, shoot, when the Gundam gun comes around and like the Gatling gun, like that is one of those like pivotal moments of like, oh, you know, that was something that they didn't account for. So
yeah, it's like a jujitsu, you know, or I think perfect. But I like the thing about Bret Hart, because I remember, I've never been into wrestling, but I remember when Bret Hart was popular, I always heard about that. Bret Hitman Hart, right?
Isn't
that? Yeah. And then there was that arcade game from Acclaim.
Yeah.
That was like really good. Yeah. But no, that's true. Like, that's what's cool about the battles is like, why do they go to a certain weapon?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's really cool at that point. You know, you could use the beam rifle, and he did that to quickly take out, well, almost, because I guess the guy kind of survived. But, you know, there's a lot of times where that Gundam EX is just using his sabers because he can do really good work with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, at that, with that GM battle, cutting off the one arm and then the arm and the head, like real quick. And it's like interesting how, and I brought this up in the video, it's like there's so many times maybe he could have aimed for the cockpit and just didn't, because he's feeling that pressure, you know, that mm-hmm. pressure. And I love that, and I need to explore that more in some videos, because like I'm seeing a lot of people talking about how the new type stuff didn't really make sense in this, and I'm like, well, it kind of did, but maybe it's because we don't really talk about it a lot beyond the very fantastical.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you think about it in terms of like, you know, we love making the comparison between Gundam and Star Wars, and it's like typically the Jedi move is to cut off limbs, like to literally disarm people to make them, you know, to take away their combat effectiveness, right? And that's exactly what he did with his beam saber. Is like, okay, I'm going to strip this weapon of all of its armament.
Yeah.
Literally take its arms off, take its head off so that it can't see anymore, and I don't have to kill the pilot, because then she's rendered defenseless.
Right.
And compare that to the end when the Goof drives the heat saber straight through the cockpit, because that clearly an old type pilot doesn't think with the idea that like, oh, I'm going to try and So I find that stuff fascinating. And to your point, I think that those are the types of new type explorations that typically, I don't want to say they go over people's heads, but I think that
they're subtle. So it's not necessarily talked about, you know, especially when I was watching the original Mobile Suit Gundam, and there's just a scene of Mirai just staring.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bright's like, do you sense something? Or what's wrong? Not that you sense. She's like, what's wrong? And she's just staring.
Mm-hmm.
It's not animated, it's not saying anything, and it's like, oh, something's happening. Or all of a sudden it'll be like, oh, do you feel that? But they're not explaining what it is. You just know, okay, as a new type, there's some sort of brainwave activity occurring. So I think I want to get into that stuff more too. But the other video I dropped too was of the Robot Spirits Mark II for anime.
Mark IIs, man.
Okay. So yeah, I had so many. Did you think one looked better than the others?
I mean, I guess like, let me couch my opinion in, I do appreciate how like the newer models, they're incorporating more articulation to get those like anime accurate poses. Mm-hmm. But I actually don't like anime accurate poses, if only because, and you see this with like the real grade Gundam 2.0, you get like these weird hinges that are exposed just to get the shoulder to turn around. And so it's like, while I appreciate all of the mechanics and the engineering that went into doing that, I'm like,
It's not. And I was thinking that too, as I was like posing it in the video, I was like, okay, so it goes out this far, but then I was thinking, well, you would then probably have to make sure you're posing it in a way where it's not showing that exposed part. You know, or like, because if it's just all exposed like that, it just kind of looks weird how there's just kind of all these joints sticking out. So yeah, you kind of have to do it in a way where you're making use of it to do a pose, but without exposing. And I think it was like that with, was it the G 70 or 80? I forget. There was that other, or there was an RX 78-2 that came out that had like crazy articulation.
Yeah, both. I mean, the G40 has pretty good articulation, but the Beyond Global.
Oh, Beyond. That's the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
That one has probably the most interesting articulation I've ever seen in the wrist, where like the wrist actually pops out of its joint and allows you to like hinge the wrist on a ball point, which is pretty cool.
It is cool, because if you think about doing, you know, especially holding a weapon, there are some times where I wish the wrist would almost hinge kind of against the forearm so it can kind of carry the gun correctly. Man, it's like I need to scratch my eyes, but like I don't want to get paint all over me. no, but
I'm committed to the bit. This is wicked uncomfortable, but I'm
yeah, I know you're even wearing an eye patch. No, but yeah, I'm actually excited about building that 2.0 because I released the video of the Mark II because originally I thought I would have the video up for the Synanjustein, but there are so many decals, so many water slide decals. I think more than any other I've done. And I don't know if that's true and I just forgot because I like that generally. But
yeah, you know, I love having the option. But, you know, typically I'm not big into like over decals. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess it depends. Like when it's like the way it is on the Verka, and excuse me, I'm going to, I got to scratch myself. Feel better. With the Verka, it's almost like it's made to look that way.
Yeah.
So as I was like putting decals, I was like, you know what? I'll stop here. I was like, no, I feel like I should do the whole thing. I've already put this much work into it. You know, I feel like I'd rather get all the rest of the decals on. So I'm almost done. And the thing is, there's so many decals and there are just sometimes this happens where they'll not really dry correctly.
Yeah.
And kind of bubble up, but then I'll put water on it still. But I think it like something to do with maybe the adhesion or whatever is gone, but I'm going to go over it with a top coat when I'm done.
Okay.
And I feel
like I was going to ask, like, are you, cause I mean, the way I would typically do it would be to like do it in sections where it's like, okay, I'm going to do like the left arm, hit all of the decals on the left arm, top coat it. Then I'll do like the leg, all the decals on that, top coat it. But you're doing the entire kit and then top coating the entire kit.
Yeah, although I kind of like your idea. I was doing it in the very chaotic way that shouldn't be done, where I'm like big sticker, little smaller sticker, okay, and I'm like going in order of the, like I'll get the number, the emblem, and then I start going to look, oh, it's like, am I going to really do these little ones? And then if I don't, it's like, oh, I have to. And because it's a Verka.
Yeah.
You know, like, and this one, I can't wait to talk about it in the review. It was a great build and it's so sturdy. I haven't had anything fall off on it yet, except the fingers actually, because it's those articulated ones. Yeah. But yeah. Luckily, it comes with a hand that is static molded, to hold a gun.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Yeah. So I get, and you already built the Real Grade 2.0.
Yeah, I've got it right here next to the Real Grade Zaku on the shelf back there.
Actually, yeah. But no, that. So what did you think of the build process?
I thought it was great. I mean, it went faster than any Real Grade that I've ever built. And I think part of that's just it's a low complexity build.
You think they refined it?
Well,
as part of being an update?
I don't think so. I think that just the Granddaddy Gundam doesn't have a lot of like extra bells and whistles on it.
Yeah.
Like coming from something like the Epion, which was the last Real Grade that I built. Shout out to Zeke New York for sending that to us. The wings, the articulation in the wings, there's so much, like there's so many little hinges. So each of those wings is like a 15-20 minute process. To get,
you know what, build. That was a good build too. It had more unique things going on, but that, so the Real Grades really do hit it. But man, as soon as I'm done with the Synanjustein, and I'm going to be working on that Mark II, I'm going to be doing a video on it. I think I want to get the narrative for COD next.
Yeah.
Because I really like that design and I'd like to have them together. And you know, I was shopping for Gunpla stands, not people that are, but love Gunpla. I'm shopping for the action base.
I'm not sure that you can buy those online, but
no, but the action bases, do you off the top of your head have an action base preference?
You know, I don't, but part of that is because I 3D print and make action bases.
Oh yeah.
That's it. It's a little unfair. Because there are so many different options out there, right? Like you have the Bandai, the typical, like the gray, they make them in a lot of colors, but it's like the standard action base 2, I think it is. But there is one that I picked up on Amazon years ago that is actually kind of interesting because it's about the size of an iPad and it's got like a little, like a clear plastic liner in it. And so you can swap out like a card, like if you wanted to print out like a little card to kind of,
a label display thing or something.
Yeah, you know, something like that. So I don't know.
So
you have like a one that you like?
Yeah, I think today or just recently I came down to, let me grab it real quick. It's the and I don't know if they make them like this anymore. Yeah. It's the action-based one, but usually it's smaller, and this is like just a square piece that's sticking out for this to go on. But this had a larger bottom too. I wonder if it says underneath in here. I have two of these that I had with my old Master Grade 2.0 Zaku 2 and Rashar Zaku 2 and RX78 2. And this has been, out of all the ones I have, this has been the only one to not fall apart on me.
Well, there you
like,
go.
You know how sometimes you'll just have it on there and then like
just like it flops over.
Yeah, and actually this uses a screw.
I do like ones that have some kind of screw or like ratchet mechanism that holds them in place. This here is my favorite action base right now, the Zeke New York special here.
Okay, and so did you even print the actual
I have a printed one that works with it, but this is actually one of the ones that came with that action base too that I was talking about. And again, you know, to your point, that little stand on it has like these little teeth that grip onto, so you can kind of set the post at any angle that is suitable for your kit.
Those I think are the new default standard. But yeah. I don't think they're as sturdy.
Well, they have an Allen wrench in them and like a screw on one side. So I think that they just need to be tightened when you find, like when you put them in place. But you're right. They are tensioned. They're not like, they don't have like a tooth in them that like holds it in place.
And that's why, like while I was working on the Sinanji Stein, I was having it displayed on this. And for one, it just, I'm trying to buy them now for all my Master Grades. I feel like Master Grades on a stand just look better than just standing there.
I agree.
And yeah, so I was trying to find the best ones and I love this one. But yeah, I'll have to shop around some more. So, but yeah. I can't wait to actually put stands on all of mine, because I just think it will just display better. I don't know.
I mean, like even for any 1/100 scale kit, like I've got the Zeta and RE100 Bawu on the shelf behind me, and like the Zeta tail binder I have propped against the wall because it's the only way I can keep it standing without toppling over. So it's like the
I just moved it over on the screen. Yeah, cool. I like that shelf with the lights. Yeah. I want to be a little more deliberate with my display instead of just like lining them up, you know.
I definitely want to give this whole set a zhuzh because I love that you got the detail behind you.
Yeah, no, that is pretty cool. Maybe this has to do with me understanding lighting when I'm streaming, but when I turn on that light, it then kind of ruins the rest of the light. So, and it's not dimmable, you know, so not too big of a deal. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, the title of this show being about, like, is Requiem for Vengeance a Halloween series movie? So,
wow. Like, you know what's interesting is it's like, so you're the spirit of vengeance, Batman, and I am, you know, the Phantom Pain Solid Snake that's out for vengeance, and we're talking about Requiem for Vengeance. It seems like revenge is a theme around tonight's show that we didn't even plan.
Now, is revenge and vengeance the same thing?
Ooh, that's a good question. And I know that Batman himself would probably debate that what he does is justice, not revenge.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though there's that iconic line from the animated series, right? I'm vengeance, I'm the knight.
Right. That's why when I was a kid and I'd hear him say vengeance, I always felt like that was a kinder way to take revenge, almost like it's a justified justice. You know, like you're saying, it's like a justified revenge.
Well, so it's like, what's the difference between revenge and avenge, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Then there's that too, like avenge, like I will avenge your, you never hear a bad guy say that, you know, that it's usually the good guys like, I will avenge. Well, maybe a bad guy would say it that.
I mean, they would say it to themselves because we're all the good guy in our own story, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. No. So yeah, then I'd say, okay, Halloween stuff. So for instance, and this actually started for me last year when last Halloween or right before, I forget, it was around that time because I was a la carte because I got heavy back into Castlevania because I had watched that first season and then didn't watch the rest. And then for Halloween last year or October, I watched the rest and I was like, the Castlevania anime is perfect for Halloween time just because it's Dracula stuff and it's
the gothic horror.
Horror, but action, because you know, I like the action on top of it. Oh, you know, and Ultronimus is saying revenge is for yourself, avenge is for another.
There you go.
So what about vengeance? That's what I'm interested in. Oh, here we go from Mo Flyer. Requiem of Vengeance is not a Halloween show. It's another Zeon apologist anime like Devil 83 and MS Igloo. I don't know about apologist, but maybe, you know, just like a being able to write from a different perspective.
You know? Well, you know, it's so funny. I love that whenever anything that's not, you know, clear, like Federation or the good guys comes out, there's that tired meme of like, oh, you know, here comes the fascist apologia, right? And it's like, but if you watch the original show, and I love pointing this out to people, is it's like, you know, in the original prologue part where it's like, you know, it has been 1 year since the War of Independence was declared, it says both sides were responsible for half of humanity being wiped out, and it says humanity was what was it, the, it's like they were astounded at their own actions. It doesn't even say in the name of independence, it just says humanity was appalled by their own actions. And so it's like, there's the implication there that there's no, that all sides in war are the bad guy, right?
Right. And
for a kid's show, you have to have good guys and bad guys. But
yeah, and I think at the same time, there's always, and I think this is true in all war, is that there are people that are just caught up in it just because that's how they were born, that's where they were, you know, and so it's like, there's all those little things. Like for me, you know, I keep saying this, I love the ending of Requiem for Vengeance because it's like, we got sympathy for this character, but at the end of the day, she's Zeon. So she's going to fight. So she was in that culture of, you know, anyway, I want to point out something. Lucas Garrett is here in the chat. And while you were talking, thank you for talking because it allowed me to set up the chat.
Hey, there we go. Here. Happy to do it.
Yeah. Thank you. You knew what I was trying to do. This is great. I am so glad Lucas Garrett said this because this further goes down what I feel of Halloween. Like he's saying, it's definitely a Halloween horror flick. And remember, Gundam Requiem for Vengeance takes place in Romania, home of Vlad Tepes, also known as Dracula, which there is such a good point.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I was talking to Gavin Hignight and I was talking about it seems like it's horror. Oh, and it's coming out October. He goes, well, that wasn't intended, but I think it worked out.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, even the mobile suits designer of the Gundam was like, oh, yeah, the Gundam is supposed to look skeletal. The reason that it's got like so many exposed, you know, it's like it looks like a rib cage instead of looking like a traditional Gundam torso. So there's this like there's this even the design of the jaw of the Gundam, like if you look at it, it's reminiscent of the EZ-8, but it also looks like a skeleton's, like the bone, that jawbone. So it's really cool the way that this sort of visual, these visual cues kind of inform the mood of what the story is supposed to be about.
Yeah, and with us not even expecting that. Hold on a second. You mind if you talk for a second? Because I think I'm getting an important call.
Happy to. With regard to Requiem for Vengeance being a Halloween story, and I think part of it is wishful thinking, right? Because we all know that there are plenty of Gundam stories that are Christmas stories, right? And we always want there to be a holiday for every for every series. And it goes back to kind of like, oh, you know, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? You know, yes and no, right? Like, I know I watch Die Hard at Christmas. I would also be interested.
All good. Just because the kid's out and my wife went to go with the other kids. Anyway, kind of going back to this, like, so yeah, when something is Halloween-y, like, does it mean it has to be horror or can it just evoke
So that goes to what I was saying is like, you know, I was like, we want there to be a Gundam Halloween show to match up with like the Gundam Christmas shows, because it's like, you know, is Die Hard a Christmas movie, even though there's not a lot of Christmas imagery in it? Well, it's like, it's set at Christmas. It's a Christmas party that he's breaking up. So it's like,
if the Christmas party wasn't happening,
yeah,
it wouldn't have happened. Yeah. And so, but yeah, you could look at then what would be different than with Gundam. And that's what's actually interesting about Christmas movie versus a Halloween movie or show is Christmas is more of the aesthetic. Sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something about giving or being with family, but I think for like something that would be Halloween, like was a lot of times horror movies are released around October anyway, you know, or it just usually around Halloween time, people like, okay, I'm going to go binge Friday the 13th. I remember I did that a few years ago. I went through all the, that's why I in the thumbnail, I called it Jason X or EX.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, the Jason X movie.
Jason goes to space.
Yeah. Which I loved. I was ready for that at that point.
Honestly, I'm glad that they kind of did that to just to get him out of a camp, right? Like to put him in a different environment. And so, okay, Adam, let me ask you, this is our new tradition of asking the host questions instead of the other way around. So how do you feel about the tradition of like horror movies coming out on Christmas? Like it's been happening lately,
Christmas horror movies a lot lately. I don't know if you've noticed, there's been like Santa, like horror flicks, like Krampus, or the ones where the Santa just is a badass and he's just fighting people. I like that because I think that just goes to, it's on one hand, I think it's maybe a cool idea or a studio knowing, oh, this will make money, but it really taps into people wanting unique things that are familiar to them, but are put together. Like horror is like a fake way to evoke or is a way to evoke like fake fear. Mm-hmm. You don't normally feel that in your life. It's kind of a way to like get high on a drug. You know what I mean? Like you don't normally feel those things unless it's evoked to you in some way. You're normally, you know, depending on what you go through your life, I understand some people maybe have gone through true horror, but like sometimes watching a horror movie can kind of evoke that. But then you add the Christmas where you feel comfortable and happy. And then
I'm going to use the triggering phrase of subverting expectations, right? It's like we typically like the warm and fuzzies around Christmas, but you know, I think that there's something I don't know. There's something taboo about feeling that kind of horror element during Christmas time, right? And to your point, I mean, I think that people obviously, it's the whole reason that we consume fiction media in general is to feel feelings that maybe we don't necessarily always want to feel. Like, you know, I don't always want to feel sad or like guilty or things, but there are certain films that it's like, wow, you know, I love watching that movie even if it makes me feel sad. There's actually a Doctor Who episode that it's like, you know, obviously set in a future society where people have these like little patches. They're almost like nicotine patches that they put on their neck to feel different emotions. Like you said, like a drug. It's like, you know, hey, I want to feel nostalgia right now. Oh man, I missed that. Like,
that's interesting. It's the opposite of that. Did you see that movie Equilibrium?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I think that's been done in other movies before, but they take the medicine so they don't have emotion.
Right.
Yeah,
there's a new one coming out that's actually a horror movie starring I think Adam Scott, where it's like, I think it's called Severance, and the premise is that when you go to work and when you come home, they erase your memory.
I think that's a TV show on Apple TV or something. I haven't watched it.
Neither have I, but just the premise of it sounds very cool. Like, you know,
interesting.
Because these are the types of things that we like, we bounce back and forth, right?
Yeah. And Lucas Garrett, look at this. Batman vs. Dracula, 2005 animated movie. I had no idea. I mean, Batman has Halloween vibes. I think, Brian Zanichelli was even saying Batman 2022. Yeah, because it's the darkness, the horror, it's the fear. Okay. Yeah. I think, for Halloween, there has to be fear associated to it, just because Halloween, a lot of it traditionally, you're wearing costumes that are scary. You know, mm-hmm. the traditional things like the ghost, the witch, you're saying trick or treat, you know, what does a trick do? That trick can evoke fear. So I think it goes down to movies having that fear, which I think kind of the basis of what the characters are going through in Requiem for Vengeance is fear of Federation, like Fetties have a mobile suit.
Gundam monster, right?
And then, yeah, it's just slicing things up.
So it's funny because, like, you know what? The tradition of Halloween is All Hallows Eve, right? You know, you have this, it's the day that, like, that the dead can walk among the living. And so that fear that gets evoked by Halloween is that, like, basically your own skeletons that you have in your closet are coming home to visit you. And so it's like, so there is that element of, like, vengeance of, like, oh man, you know, I hope that I don't have any, like, I hope I don't have a guilty conscience because, like, now the dead are going to be walking around us for a night. And so I think I mentioned this when we were originally talking about Requiem for Vengeance, is that there's a lot of night battles during that series. And you don't like, I mean, probably more, the percentage of battles that happen at night in Requiem for Vengeance is greater than any other Gundam series, even with a longer run time. Right.
Yeah. And I wonder how hard it is, you know, other than, you know, space battles, but usually there's not much detail I have to do. We're like battles at night on Earth. And the dark on Earth don't really happen as much in space. So it'd be like the matte painting in the background that has blues in it as well, a bunch of white dots or whatever. So I think there's something about that. Requiem for Vengeance with the Unreal Engine 5, they can really pull off the nighttime. And, you know, other thing that's cool too, I mean, we talked about how it looks like Jason, you know, and it's a slasher because he's got his beam saber, but also the trees, the forest, you know, that evokes the camping element that is, you know, in Jason and all that.
And there weren't any teenagers getting busy that were getting.
Yeah, I know that one. Yeah, that's
all we needed was like Lieutenant Arhoon to have a to have a scene in the woods.
No, but yeah. So, and I'm trying to think. The Hulk movie, and I think it was the one, with
Ed Norton,
which. Yeah. Missed opportunity for him to be a part of the MC. Like, I almost feel like actually it's telling the reason he wasn't in any more MCU movies, because of the direction MCU was kind of going. You know, no shit on MCU, but it was more of, these are more of like a whole like kind of executive production.
Right. I think that for the same reason that like Joaquin Phoenix was in on the Joker movies, because Todd Phillips said like, no, we're going to make a real movie. We're just going to put this superhero skin on it so that we can sell it. Right.
Yeah.
Edward Norton was trying to get that same thing where it was like, no, I want to make real movies, but we want to put the superhero skin on it so that we can sell it. And then when he realized like, oh no, this is just like a marketing machine. Like,
yeah. But what, and so that was interesting about that. I liked that movie and I think it's overlooked. Like, right. Isn't it? Is that even considered part of the MCU? It's still considered MCU because it has some of the characters.
I think they even reference it in like the Avengers movie. Like Mark Ruffalo talks about like the suicide attempt that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There's a part in that movie. I think they're in the warehouse in Brazil. Isn't it like the soda warehouse or something, where he becomes like a monster?
Mm-hmm.
Where like you don't see him, like the guys are in the warehouse and then they're like getting pulled. And to me, I was like, that makes sense, because the Hulk is kind of a monster. Now these guys are fearing him, you know, because you would fear something like that, even though it's a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
So I love it when we see, and that's kind of the subverting thing you're talking about, where you take something you're familiar with. Here's another idea. I have written a story about, like, think of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But like one of the guys that happens to get caught up in everything is like a Secret Service special agent.
Well, it kind of sounds like you're describing a Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Did you ever see that movie?
Well, is that the one where, maybe I haven't.
Where Alan Tudyk and I forget the other actor's name, but they're like a couple of hillbillies that are on a fishing trip in the woods. And then a bunch of college kids are like out camping. And
they get themselves killed.
Yeah, and it's okay. Like, so the college kids are the slasher killers, and you know.
But the idea here would be, you would set up the movie where you're so scared of, for instance, Leatherface and the family, like all that horror, the cannibalism and all that, and that they're like killing people one by one. But this one dude just happened to evade it so far, but he's also a badass. So by the end of the film, he has like obliterated them. And in this script I wrote, it actually takes place like in between Germany and France, like some countryside where rich people will go to this diner because they're being served human meat. It's like a delicacy.
Oh, yeah. And
it's getting sourced by...
game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's getting sourced by this family of kind of whatever hillbillies would be in Europe, you know, countryside people that would capture people. And they would capture people from... what did I write in it? You know, the changing rooms in malls, like a clothing store.
Sure.
And then there'd be like false walls and people would be kidnapped. And so this secret agent dude, and in my mind, it was Timothy Dalton the whole time, by the way, he was visiting friends in France and the guy's wife goes missing while going shopping. So now he's putting on a secret agent and he tracks down this farmhouse where they're capturing
James Bond, by the way.
It's pretty much, yeah. And it's pretty much James Bond just fighting Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But yeah, I had it to where by the end of it, he had called in special forces. And so like you see these helicopters come in, drop so they can, it's like by the end of the movie, like the whole movie, you're feeling scared for this, for everybody. And it's disgusting. It's horrible. Then by the end of it, you get redemption, but through a badass, you know?
Okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, I need to revisit that. But then that reminded me of something else. What was it? So where I live, there's a lot of people from India that also live in the area because it's by the airport.
You know, a lot of people make sense. Yeah, gotcha.
So the movie like theaters, the movie theaters will have a lot of Indian movies. And to be honest, they're pretty awesome looking. And there's this one, it's called Bagheera, which is... I think the name of like the panther in Jungle Book, but I think that's just panther and Indian maybe or something, but it's like Batman. It's a guy that he's just in all black, not in like a superhero. I guess there's some scenes that showed like he had a mask on, but like you never see his face and you just see him like in the trailer, just randomly showing up places and beating the crap out of people, even showing him with a sword, stabbing it through the back of a guy's head, coming out his mouth.
Oh, so definitely no kill rule like like Batman.
But I was like, oh, that's awesome because what this is it's a quote unquote good guy superhero, you know, trying to defend. It's like the drug dealers,
Like
sex trafficking. Yeah, what's that?
It's like the Punisher, you know.
Yes, it's that. But like a superhero because they show him like on the roof holding a machete and he has the mask and he's wearing all black and that's like, you know what, that I dig that stuff. That's kind of like Batman, and I think that's why Batman works on Halloween. And I think what's funny is it was Batman Returns that was Christmas.
Yep.
Right. And that worked too. Even with the marketing having the
white. But again, you know, the Halloween on Christmas thing, I mean, shoot, it's a song lyric, right? Blink-182 has that has that song where it's like, oh, we'll celebrate Halloween on Christmas. We'll be like Jack and Sally, Nightmare Before Christmas, tapping into that whole like that Hot Topic brand, right? Like
So Code Fairy. Because that took place near the end of the 1 year war. And I remember, aren't there scenes? I think they did Thanksgiving.
No, they do a jack-o'-lantern.
Is it okay.
Yeah. So they have a jack-o'-lantern and then they do celebrate Christmas at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Christmas dinner. Maybe that's what I'm thinking about the Thanksgiving. But so they do the Halloween. So I tell you, I think in the future, we're going to look at Code Fairy and say that's like one of the most underrated Gundam stories. Because even the new type plot, there's a little new type plot there.
Yeah, I mean, and you and I have been on that like since it came out. Is like, I mean, well, maybe not since it came out. It was like 2 or 3 weeks after it came out. You and I were kind of like, wait a second, this game is being slept on. Like, not only is it everything that we've said that everything that we as Gundam fans said that we wanted, right? We were like, okay, we love the gameplay from GBO2, but we don't like the PvP. We want a PvE game, with a story. And characters that we can bond with. And it's like, so Code Fairy hits all those.
Yeah.
But
I think at the end of the day, it leaned too much into the gameplay about like time, you know, because every mission is timed. And then like you get your score based on the time, you know, so it becomes more of
gamified, like,
than just like a simulator. Like I'd rather it be, I mean, this is really what they need to do now that I'm thinking about it. Just make it where each level is more of, okay, here's the tools or here's your mobile suit, figure out what to do.
Dude, you know? They just need to make it like Metal Gear Solid 5, where it's like, you got the mission. It's open-ended. There's no time limit. You can approach the mission however you want to do it. It's like, okay, do you want to go in the front door guns blazing or do you want to sneak around the back? Do you want to disable communications? Like, what's the way to approach it?
Okay, well, let's add to that. Now, I know we're getting a little off topic, but hey, that's how we do our show. What if it is like Metal Gear Solid 5, where you are a soldier on the ground? Maybe you're a pilot too, but and you're only in a mobile suit, like if you want to, but then you got to worry about, okay, they have a lot of anti-mobile suit weapons around, so like maybe disable those first.
Exactly. You got to do some work on the ground to make sure that when you do attack with the mobile suits that you are capable of doing it, and you're not going to get overwhelmed, which is kind of what you have to do in Metal Gear Solid. It's like, you know, you really can't go in guns blazing typically, you know, because you'll get shot pretty quick.
Right. You have to like watch for snipers or, you know what? And that would be cool too, because let's say then as you progress in the game, you can then go back to levels, but then you can even load out with a mobile suit that's kitted out. But what could be a similar system to GTA where like, okay, detection mobile suit, and then they send in like a whole bunch of, so you can play older missions, but the more, if you just come in with a mobile suit, they'll just call in the defense or something. But that could be, so it could be a way to constantly make replayable each mission. Anyway, that's another podcast and we need to write this down. Well, okay, Halloween Gundam game.
Ooh, does that
even exist? Because I you know, with all the video games I play, I even think of, okay, what's a Halloween video game? To me, it's Castlevania. It's got the organs playing in the soundtrack most of the time. You're slaying vampires.
Well, what about something like Dead by Daylight, right? You know,
that's 100% like made to be.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's asymmetrical, right? And honestly, an asymmetrical Gundam game would be pretty awesome, because if one player gets to play as like the Gundam, and then everyone else is Zeon pilots, and they have to like achieve a certain goal, like maybe they're trying to gas a colony or something, and it's like, oh no, here comes the Gundam that can, you know, take you out in one hit kind of thing. Like,
wow, I love what, because, and then it could be the reverse where it's like a group of GMs and then a Guff custom.
Yep. Packard shows up on the field and it's.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And I would love the idea of like, you know, it's more of about damage to your mobile suit where it's like, hey guys, just to let you know, my sensor's out. So I have to, now my vision is limited, and maybe it like changes to where it's like through the cockpit instead of like the censored, or you know, something like that, where, or maybe you lose your arm and it's like, or my beam saber ran out, and like you're having to like talk about the weapons and your loadouts to try to because that would definitely work, because that's the other thing, you know, talking about Halloween, like when initially designing the enemies, Zeon and Gundam, they obviously made them look menacing. Mm-hmm. Like even the Zabi's castle, it's just a bunch of spikes that were sticking up. It looks like Dracula's castle. And anytime Amuro had to go up against something, even when the Zaku 2s first showed up in the colony with the Manoa, and it's like, oh my God. And then, you know, knocking down the trees and they did a good job with that. But okay. So Steven, what about you? What's like your favorite kind of Halloween show or movie to watch?
That's a good question. I'm honestly not a big Halloween guy. I mean, I get really excited around the holidays anyway, so like I love, you know, decking out the house with stuff, but I've never been like a big horror guy.
I've realized lately it's very interesting. So you know the Saw movies?
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with them? Have you watched them all?
I think I dropped off at like Saw 4.
Okay. I haven't seen the last three. And I think there's like 10 or 11. But it's interesting because my youngest wanted to watch them. So I've been rewatching it with him. And it's funny because it's maybe just as art evolves, it didn't seem as bad as I remember when I first saw it. I was like, interesting, this actually looks very cartoony, almost like when you'd see pixel graphics and think, whoa, these graphics are amazing.
Right.
Seeing the gore in the Saw movies, you know, I think what really helps to sell it though is when someone's acting very well, that they're scared.
Yes. I mean, Gary Elwes does an amazing job in that first one. Like,
he kind of has the scary side to him, and it pays off because he ends up being, you know, a bad guy. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but here's something interesting. So my youngest got out of school early and we went to go see Smile 2.
Okay.
But we left after.
Wow.
After about maybe 30 minutes. Like even for me, it was uncomfortable, and it was more about the gore.
Yeah.
Like, and not necessarily like a person acting. And it was because it was in the movie theater and it was doing it. It's like, you know, a jump scare, but they were combining it with knowing something gross is going to happen. Yeah. So and that's something I would probably watch, but I could tell he was uncomfortable. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine with, and I was like, so that type of horror to me is more of the shocking horror. It's like an unearned.
And gore in and of itself doesn't really, there's not a lot of payoff in that.
Right.
Like the type of horror movies that really stick with me are the ones where there's a lot of unknown. So like White Noise with Michael Keaton. I probably said this before, but like the two things, like the two kind of horror fantasy things that scare me are ghosts and aliens. And it's only because those are the two that are the most plausible to me, like that could actually exist in real life, like vampires, werewolves. It's like that stuff doesn't scare me because I know it's not real. But ghosts and aliens, man, that's so,
I loved horror movies growing up so much. Like I watched them all. Like I loved gore, but it was like, for me, like the stuff in Evil Dead.
Right. Dead it's 2. Like Army of Darkness. It's like, it's yeah. Fun gore. It's not like, you know,
exactly. And that's what helped, because it's like, it's centered around this character that's reacting to everything. And you like how he's reacting. Even the first Evil Dead, it was more of an artistic way to be gory. Because it was like the first time, that's what it was known for, like showing really crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And then like I love Jason, but to me it's because Jason was just, it was like this fantasy beast, you know. Well,
and in a way we root for Jason, right? Yeah. Like it goes back to what we were talking about around vengeance and like justice, right? You know, while the kids in Friday the 13th movies, they then... in and of themselves, they don't deserve to die, but there is like, okay, Jason is punishing generational sins that are happening, right? Like he recognizes that the only reason he exists is because these people that were supposed to be taking care of him weren't. And so then when he sees it going on in the future, he takes it out on them. And so it's the same sort of, like, I think human beings, like in general, we kind of have this bloodlust in us that we love to see justice exacted upon people. We love the Punisher. We love Batman because it's like when we see, you know, the gang member that tortures and beats kids, and it's like, oh yeah, now the Punisher is going to cut his fingers off. And it's like, ooh, there's like, you know, it's disgusting. But at the same time, there's like, ooh, you know what? They deserve it kind of thing.
Kind of like Char blowing off Cassilia Zabi's head.
Exactly. And so when you get that from Requiem for Vengeance, all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, even though the Gundam's the bad guy in this show, it's like, well, these Zeon kind of deserve it. I mean, especially when you think about like Arhun, you know, how quickly she pulled a gun on people, and it, you know, the doctor is, so if we were doing horror movie tropes, like the doctor is like the virgin character. Like, did you ever watch Cabin in the Woods?
Yeah.
So the doctor is the virgin. You know, he's the one that is supposed to survive everything because he's the one who's not like exacting revenge on everybody and taking out his frustration and anger on everybody.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I think that's, you know, something really cool about Requiem for Vengeance, that when I see people complain about it, it's like, I think it's valid. People can have their complaints, but I think as someone that loves storytelling, there is a lot of little things that it's doing without it being in your face. But if you were to dissect it, it's like, oh, that makes sense. That's really cool that this character is this way. Even by the end, I really think they set up that stab into the Gundam EX. That's almost a scare thing, because you're like, okay, it's going to work. You're in this swell of sympathy for both characters at that moment, and then all of a sudden, bam! But at the same time, when you see the goof do that, you're like, "Yeah,
doesn't that's the music goof... drop out?"
What?
Like, doesn't the music drop out when that happens? Like, I feel like there's this crescendo.
It was like it like all happened, and then like you can feel it. And the other thing that worked is when they introduced the goof customs, they were badasses. So when they do it, there's this feeling in your head where it's like, no, but the Goofs were being the badasses that they are, you know? And so there's so many different elements that came together that made that. And you know what was really cool? I keep overlooking, and I made a GIF of it, is at the end when the HLVs go up into space and they make it dock in the Musai. Now, I don't remember seeing that before.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it like in animation like that. We've always seen the Komusai.
Yeah, exactly. But like that, I think that was a perfect little detail to add that. And just to see the ship stuff like that, it made me think, oh, I cannot wait. Hopefully with another Unreal Engine 5 Gundam, they start doing more of this space stuff, you know, because I think it would look really good.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah, Jason is like Minotaur in the maze. The force, you know, I'm not familiar with Minotaur in the maze. Is that a Hercules thing? Jason and the Argonauts? Oh, Jason is like the Minotaur.
Yeah, the character maze. Jason.
And that's a Hercules thing, right? The Minotaur in the maze?
I mean, it's definitely Greek mythology. I forget who the god is that creates the Minotaur and puts him in there as like a guardian of the maze. My Greek mythology is terrible.
I mean, look into that because I love it when you can like trace story elements back, you know, and it's like, oh, that's a neat concept that now we're seeing and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it just goes to show that like there's nothing new under the sun, right? Every story is a human story at the end of the day. And I think we talked about that in regard to like Transformers 1, where it's like, you know, the story might be about robots, but it's a human story, like about corruption and about, you know.
I'll always remember Transformers 1 is such an excellent movie wrapped in that something I don't care about, and that's sentient robots. Like, it's so interesting. Because even I remember scrolling Amazon and I saw the Optimus Prime action figure, and I was like, oh, I remember that from that movie. That's so good. But I, you know, man, if they made that live action somehow, you know, like, or Unreal Engine 5.
There you go. Boom.
I bet people would have liked that a little better. But anyway, no, I think that's it. That's the end. I think we can, you know, really it's all up to anyone's opinion, really. But I really do think Wrecking for Vengeance is like an awesome Gundam entry that falls right onto Halloween. Like, I feel like I'm going to start, like, every October, I make sure I do a watch. Because it's not a long watch.
No, it's not. I mean, it basically is a movie, right? Two and a half hours, roughly.
Great idea for them to do that because I can take breaks and there's always the beginning that's almost kind of connecting in a way, you know, whether it's through what they're talking about previously. And that's a good way to go about it. So
awesome.
All right. Well, yeah. Anything else to add? I'll add really like I brought up at the beginning. Oh, you know what I should bring up?
Mafty being having a jackalite.
Orville Gundam.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, because
I need to get the new graphic up. I made a new one that's going to be used on the stream because when I build the RX-78-2 Real Grade 2.0, I'm going to do a Art Rovo stream. So yeah, remember guys, link in the description because if you use my code, you get free shipping if you buy two things. That's a pretty good deal, and there's usually two things to get.
And Adam gets nothing.
I get nothing. I am just helping out. So,
I mean, like, I love Art Robo, honestly. Like, super fast shipping had like a really sweet note thrown in there, with the order, which was awesome. And Yu-Gi-Oh cards, right?
Yeah, we're gonna next time we meet, we need to bring our cards in battle.
Exactly. You're going down, Yugi.
Well, cool. Well, thanks. Have a good Halloween, hopefully, or have a happy Halloween if it's like late for you. But
You guys don't get a tummy ache.
Yeah, no, I'm avoiding. I was only able to fit in this Batman costume by avoiding candy. So, all right, all. We'll talk later. See y'all.